Welcome to Opera Out of the Box, unpacking opera piece by piece. I'm your host, Brad Cresswell, and today I'm joined in the studio by Toledo Opera's Director of Development, Leo Whitaker, and she's brought along a very special guest for us. That would be... Bob Masters. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are a veteran of World War II. You've got a lot of stories under your belt, and we're going to hear about some of those as we prepare for South Pacific, which is happening in February. You were in the real South Pacific, yeah?
I was, to an extent of our island jumping up, but I think the real South Pacific is over toward Fiji.
Yeah.
And some of those with the real South Pacific where probably your show would be showing the people there, but we were up from Tarawa and things like that, Solomons.
So you were on the Enterprise, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to be confused with Star Trek, by the way, mm-hmm. for those of you that are listening.
Thank you, Brad.
So, what were your duties on board that ship?
Well, it was in high school. I hit it. You can't say a sprained wrist would be an advantage, but my teacher, she said I couldn't do typing. She says, "Why don't you step in on my shorthand?" Well, when I joined the Navy at 17 years old, there weren't a lot of shorthand 17-year-old men.
Yeah.
And as they got joined as a homeless kid, I went down and graduated and joined the Navy. And right away, even in boot camp, "Would you come help us in the office?"
Yeah.
And from then on, I was always with a group of officers, so-called, in their secretarial position.
Yeah.
Took letters from our admiral aboard ship, but mostly from the captain, the executive officer. But we were, our admiral aboard ship was not, he had no control of the ship himself. He had control of the division, which we probably had 20 destroyers and the aircraft cruiser, it was called aircraft cruiser, around us.
Yeah. So since you were in World War II, can we talk a little bit about how long you've been here? I mean, you just turned 99, yes?
Yes.
In October, mm-hmm. on Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween.
We talked a little bit before we got started here. Let's hear, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I was struck by your long life and what has been invented during your long life. I mean, basically everything except for maybe cars and airplanes, right?
And electricity.
And sliced bread. Yeah. I actually found out that you're older.
The wheel
older.
And fire predates him.
Yeah, the wheel. Right. There are plenty that predate.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But you can say, and I'm coining this phrase, that you are, well, I guess, what would you say instead of older?
You can say older.
Older than sliced.
I'm not saying I'm old.
Bread.
I'm just older.
Okay. Mm. Older than sliced bread, you could say.
I like him.
Yeah. No, you two are going to get along great.
I'm going to use that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Leah, you brought Bob here to the podcast, and obviously there's a connection with South Pacific, mm-hmm. you know, the real thing. Tell us a little bit about how you came to know Bob or how you found Bob.
Well, when we planned this season... one of the major themes that tied together Tosca and South Pacific was this overarching story of war. Both productions take place during periods of war. And so through a grant with the Ohio Humanities, the opera was able to bring in experts to talk about all these different themes. And once we got to South Pacific, I think we really knew as a company that we wanted to do more than just an educational program. We really wanted to do outreach and hear personal stories and find the human element, especially in our local community, because we're Toledo's opera. So we reached out through one of our board members. She happened to be sitting next to Bob mm-hmm. at her grandkids' Veterans Day program. I forget which school it was. But Bob was sitting there looking regal as he does today. And Bob is a really affable person and gets to know strangers quickly. And I think they just struck up a conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was just sort of one of those fortunate moments. And my board member said, "You've got to call this Bob Masters. He's 99. And it was 15 minutes after I got her text message that I called and introduced myself. And then we went and had juice together. Yeah. Bob was at the most recent honor flight from the Flag City Honor Flight Group. He got to fly to D.C., which I think we're going to talk about here today. But I went out and saw that experience for the first time in my life. And I think just I've been personally just impacted by this grant project and my unique job this year to go out and listen to people's stories. And, you know, I met Bob instantly, and just some of the jaw-dropping things that he's brought to life that, you know, I was reading in history books and in school. And so this is, for me, is really exciting.
Yeah, well, it's exciting for all of us. Mm. Bob, how old were you when you joined the service?
17.
You were 17 when you joined the service.
Graduated the first week in June, and the next week I went down and joined the Navy.
Wow.
Jumped on a train from Liberty Center.
Can you tell us a story about seeing the Enterprise for the first time?
It's strange. That answer is no, because my first assignment was out in Quonset Point, Rhode Island, and some sailors there were getting sea duty, and boy, I'm still 17, and I want that. I want to get out there where it is. So I put in, and they sent me to Hawaii. And right away, they stuck me in an office on the airport. Anyway, the story went that, or the truth went that we first went aboard, not knowingly. We went aboard from there on the Ranger.
Mm.
That's the first aircraft carrier ever built.
Wow. Mm.
And what they're doing, they're training the air fleet for night. At that was 44, middle 44, and radar was just perfecting, but better, to where they could do night flying. And we were night, they were training the pilots and the air group for night training. About 2 weeks of it, went back to Hawaii, or back to Pearl Harbor. Then the next time, got a notification to board the Saratoga.
Mm.
And that's a little more recent, you know.
You just went where they told you, basically.
Oh, the whole our group. I was in their flag.
Yeah.
But the admiral moved, his office moved. Mm. There were three of us in the flag.
I see.
The clerical. And then we, with an incident, one of the incidents out there, that one of the planes missed the landing. Landed on top of some planes that were on the deck. It's on the Saratoga.
Wow.
All the seamen out there, deckhands, what they call them, were pushed. All the planes were on fire, pushing them overboard.
Really?
Just, you know, $1 million. There, go.
Oh,
goodbye.
Just hand pushing them by them.
Right over the side.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of them are still on fire.
Can you imagine if that something like that in 2024 with all our cell phone technology, nobody would be pushing. They'd be busy getting selfies.
Yeah. Right.
And so anyway, then we went across the Enterprise, which was...
Okay.
It was well known even at the time. There only was my show six.
CV6 is what I have.
CV6.
The Big E.
The CV6. So one was a Ranger, see? Two was a Saratoga. Then there was a class of four there. Hornet, Wasp, Lexington, and Enterprise.
Wow.
Enterprise was designated as the light carrier. And I think our planes, I used to watch them from the deck, would fly pretty much all at night is all.
Yeah. Well, I do have a quiz, and I want to hear some more jaw-dropping stories from you as we move on in this podcast. But this is a world history quiz that I've got, world events in history. There are only five questions in this one, so I couldn't get all the events, you know, that have happened in the last 99 years. But I did have a few. And I have a little music that I'll start here. Okay. So it's a multiple choice quiz. So there are three answers that I give you. Only one of them is correct, okay? Now let's wait until I read the whole thing first.
Sure.
And then we'll go back and see what we did. Okay. First question is, what major economic event began in October of 1929? Would it be A, the Great Recession, B, the Great Depression, or C, the post-war boom? So A, B, or C for that question. The next question is, which event marked the start of World War II in 1939? Would that be A, Germany's invasion of France, B, Germany's invasion of Poland, or the bombing of Pearl Harbor? That's C. Now remember, this is for everybody, not just the United States, joining it later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the third one. Which global conflict was characterized by the U.S.-Soviet rivalry from the late 1940s until 1991? Is it A, World War III? Is it B, the Cold War? Or is it C, the space race? And it's Soviet-U.S. conflict, rivalry, until from the late 1940s to 1991. Okay, the next question is, what major event occurred in 1969 that was a milestone in space exploration? 1969, one of my earlier memories. Was it the first satellite launch? Was it the first manned moon landing? Or was it the Mars rover landing? And the final question is, which significant structure fell in 1989, symbolizing the end of the Cold War? Was it A, the Berlin Wall, B, the Iron Curtain, or C, the Great Wall of China? Did you think those were fairly easy to get, Bob?
Whether it be correct or not, yes.
Well, I can, you know, make no guarantees as to,
sure.
as to what's correct and what isn't.
That's fine. I remember them all.
So the first question, what major economic event began in October 1929? That would be the Great Depression. That was B. Which event marked the start of World War II? That would be Germany's invasion of Poland. You get that right? Yeah. The global conflict with the U.S.-Soviet rivalry from the late 1940s to 1991 is the Cold War. B, the Cold War. 4. What major event occurred in 1969 with a milestone in space exploration? That would be the first manned moon landing. And finally, which structure fell in 1989 symbolizing the end of the Cold War is the Berlin Wall. Did we get all those correct?
Well, as far as you're concerned.
Yep.
As far as I'm concerned, yes, indeed. So, if I were to ask you to tell us probably one of your most impressive jaw-dropping stories, what would you say in return, Bob?
I would say the dropping of the atom bomb.
It changed everything.
The reason I bring it up is it's where I was at. That brought up so much of the interest and so forth, yes.
Can you tell us more about that, what your experience with it was?
The Navy, many military allowed you 2 years overseas, and then you rotated. And just before Iwo Jima had fallen, Okinawa, yeah. I mean, some of my names would be right. Okinawa was terrible because of all suiciders.
Yeah.
But then we got hit and bombed back to Pearl Harbor, and then they transferred me off because I had my 2 years in. So we went over to an area for deportation back, waiting for transportation back. And it was in like a big gym there at Schofield, I think. And they had cots, about all we had, cots, so forth. A little sidelight of this. At that too, I had never seen this before, but some of the enlisted pilots, people never knew that some enlisted men were pilots, and they flew over the Burma area and so forth. They sure were a ragtime bunch.
Yeah.
Beards all over. They had just come back from the Burma area. Anyway, I woke up that one morning and 150 cots, you know, and it's like a gym. And there's this corner that are yakking and carrying on, this corner yakking on this corner. And I thought, well, what in the world's going on? So I go over there, one of the groups, and said, what the heck happens? Or what are you guys doing? And he said, well, they just dropped some super size bomb. On one of the cities. So
an understatement, yeah.
Yeah, that's all we knew. Never heard of a nuclear or anything. So,
were they excited? What was the feeling in the room? Were people? Did they just want more information?
I think it was pretty much that. There was nothing not to have it excited. Just that they were.
Something big had happened,
and they didn't know what it was.
Yeah,
we didn't know what it was. That was all.
Yeah.
Something unusual in the life of our lives, of young lives there.
Was this you had transferred back to the Pearl Harbor station? Is that where you were? Or you were still out in the...
I was waiting for transportation back.
Okay.
Rotation to 2 years.
Oh, okay.
The survey I'd used, yeah.
So when did you find out, I mean, like, the whole story about the atomic bomb?
Okay. We boarded that next day, I think it was. We boarded a battleship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many, because you slept on the deck or underneath gun mounts and
wherever you could.
Yeah, wherever you could. It's just transportation. So we were heading, and we know they're heading back into San Diego, and couple of days later, time we boarded there, another bomb was dropped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at that point, they knew it was something to do with the dynamite. It was something else.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they started saying a nuclear atom. It wasn't nuclear. It was always just an atom bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So then I was on, we were in the middle of the Pacific on a battleship for transportation when they announced the war ending.
What was morale like in that? What was that like, hearing the announcement of the end?
I don't think there was much difference.
Hmm.
We're still in the service, you know. Yeah. We're still going home for reassignment at that point. We were thinking reassignment. So it was the excitement of coming home as much as anything else. But if I can keep repeating it or finish the story there, we pulled into San Diego. They said it's the first... This foot battleship had pulled downtown. I don't think it wasn't too much space for a battleship.
Right.
And glorious. That was probably the day after. Yeah, the day after the war ended. I still remember. I still can see the bands playing on the dock. We're up high, you know, a big just battleship, and the docks, every place, were just filled with people.
Mm.
And Dinah Shore came aboard, and I watched her go up in the highest part, and had with a microphone was singing, and
wow,
it was a glorious time. And several years after that, Brad, after that, too, the country was just like that. It was a glorious country. People were so friendly. So it's hard to imagine what it was then and what it is now.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I was going to ask you what would be your observations over the past 99 years of how society has changed and how American society has changed in general?
It sure has, but I think if we knew the cause of that, Brad, we'd probably be able to stop it. But do we know? Vietnam was probably the start of it.
How so?
Nobody wanted Vietnam. Was it Johnson then?
Mm-hmm.
He thought he was going to be the savior of our civilization, you know. So, but it was difficult to understand what the country was changing to at that point. And I think that's probably caused the continuation we have yet today.
Yeah.
From the Vietnam War.
Started a long time ago, and it's been going since then. And it's kind of hard when you're part of history to be, you know, to view it objectively from a distance. Let's talk briefly about South Pacific, the musical, because this is kind of in preparation for this.
Sure.
You've done a little listening to it?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it true?
As I told Leah here, I was not, as I mentioned before, I was not in the area where the show was taking place, you know, when the Robinson Crusoe or something.
Yeah.
Mutiny on the Bounty and
right. mm-hmm.
some of those islands down there, which were probably east of where the string of islands I was connected with.
Mm.
But, yes, I was off on one island besides you. It was Tarawa, which is awfully close.
Yeah.
I got over the same thing. They wanted to do some picturing and so forth, and our admiral was always in charge of things like that. It was not the ship itself, because... Mm. The rest of the 20 or 30 around us, they were always on anchor. So, but I only got just a short time, and I had just glimpsed of some of the natives.
Yeah.
And I do know from history and from talking to people later on who were at Guadalcanal area and the Solomons down in there. And, The natives were treated terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Horrible. And I think they probably would in the South Pacific more if it would have been the island chain that they had to go up to get up to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not going from the north, they come from the south. I love the show South Pacific because of the wonderful music that was in it, because my family do... We're not quite operas, but they do love music. And
well, time will tell.
Maybe something new, a new at 100, huh?
Leah, you look like you have a question to ask.
Oh, no, I'm always just looking to pop in. And I had some questions, too, about, you know, some of the... I want to know, like, what it was like for you. You know, being on the ship, what the office work is. You know, I'm an office administrator, so I'm really curious about what kind of documents you were processing. And
that's changed a little bit, too.
Yeah. I mean, just sort of like the day in the life on aboard the ship. And, you know, you were in the administrative secretarial area, so you bumped into
all of them.
Quite literally some of the higher-ups. So mm-hmm. I'm really curious to know, you know, Admiral Nimitz is somebody we know from history, mm-hmm. so I want to know what your experience was there, and maybe fill in some of these historical figures for us a little bit.
As I have told not too many people, because I have never younger days sat down with anything like this, and I appreciate the opportunity because I think some people should know it. But anyway, this first, still a 17-year-old. No, I might have turned 18 there in October, out in Hawaii, and when the office guy said to run this over to administration, so I went across the flight to the hangar and went over to the administration on Ford Island, and I was going around the corner speedily. I wanted to get back on wherever it was. I wanted to get out of that place because it all was just filled with officers. And I banged into, around the corner, two of us just banged into each other. And all I saw, I looked there, and all I saw was stripes up his arm. I think an admiral has one wide one, and the next admiral has another wide one. He had about four or five of them. And I jumped back, and I said, I'm sorry, sir. He said, that's all right, son. Are you okay? I said, I'm fine, sir. And he left, and I heard, I got to the office and dropped off papers. He said, you know, you just bumped into Admiral Nimitz.
Wow. Not many people can say that.
He ended up being a 5-star. Mm-hmm. I don't think they awarded any at that point. All four. He was a 4-star. He had four of the big white ones up his arm. It's all I saw around the corner. Anyway, that's interesting, isn't it?
And you also, when you were out in Rhode Island, right, you were, you had a sort of a famous buddy.
Oh,
out
yeah.
There.
Yeah. Yeah, we, I got into the control tower, but I was not in the speaking one. We were down below where all the flights would come in, and mostly the naval services on the East Coast would file the reports with me and so forth. And finally, one day here, they announced detention. There were about three of us that were doing the desk, and here comes Henry Fonda.
Mm-hmm.
And but we all just big-eyed, see what's going to happen to Henry Fonda with us. he was one of nice man. He was young then, probably in his 30s. I noticed his uniform was probably all tailor-made. It's different than the rest of the officers. But anyway, that's one of the story of enjoyable. I left there just after Christmas.
Did you make friends during your time, and did you keep in contact with anyone from your days of service? Was that at all part of your experience?
Yes, I still mention one. We had separate quarters. There was signalmen's in there, and enlisted men have our own quarters.
Mm-hmm.
There's six or eight of us in there. And I knew them all, but I don't think we made any close contact with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Until after my 30 days at home, I was reassigned and sent back out to San Diego again. Well, got up to waiting for reassignment in Detroit, and stuck me in the office.
Mm.
Hey, come over, would you? Could have been a hotel. Come over, would you help us in the office? Sure. A few days later, he come back. He said, I've been trying to get you stationed here, but I was turned down. Mm. I didn't know this stuff. Way somebody above was watching over you, and they said you've been part of the Naval Air Force. I knew I was always at an airport, but he gave me a paper. He gave me a couple of my complete package of credentials, and he gave me another one. He said, "We're sending you. You're in charge of him to get him to San Diego." He was just a young recruit. Get him to San Diego, and you're going to be stationed out in San Diego.
Hmm.
So, anyway, there's about two of us, but I went into this office about the same, and I got very close to this one person. And I didn't follow up afterwards. I often thought my son, he was from Baltimore area. My son was out there and at one time working in computer business for a university out there, Princeton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was a computer work for Princeton, and I asked him to look up that because I knew that he was from Baltimore, and he looked that up, and he said he found an obituary of him.
Yeah.
And I was often sorry I didn't, because we were so close. In San Diego, we lived the YMCA.
Mm-hmm.
You had your opportunity. The war was over.
Mm-hmm.
We had an opportunity to live in the YMCA, and it was just like a job, and I loved San Diego at mm-hmm. that point. He and I always went to this hamburger joint before McDonald's. And we were going to buy it.
Really?
Yeah, we had lined up to buy it.
Wow. So what happened?
Well, they come along and said, your points. I've always had, when the war ended, I had points to get out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But my position was frozen.
Mm.
The FANIC says, well, I guess they didn't need secretaries so much, so you have your opportunity to go back to Chicago and get discharged. He and I talked and talked about it. He said he'd kind of like to go back to Baltimore, too, so
yeah.
We canceled the order to buy it.
What was his name?
Frank.
Savella.
Savella.
And just think, you could have been like Ray Kroc or the McDonald's brothers, right?
That's one of his, your shouldn't have, or your
should have. I've told Leah, I've got a lot of should and shouldn't have's.
I wonder if you can take us through, let's say when you were on an assignment that is, kind of exciting, kind of kept you on your toes. Take us through the day in the life. I mean, from dusk to dawn, or from dawn to dusk, what were your responsibilities? What did you have to do?
Well, I give it real closely, real specific on the Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
a day on Enterprise. We had quarters. We weren't too far. Our office was just below the flight deck. In fact, I could go out of the side area there where all the gun mounts were, and my eyes would be about level with the flight deck. But anyway, we go up the morning, and maybe not every morning, but we'd do our showering, and it was so different other place I'd been around, because you go down in the shower area, fresh water. They only open the shower certain times because of the fresh water. You go and shower. Now, this is the morning, you know, you shower, probably 6, as the bugle would blow, the whole ship would wake up. We'd have our shower. The nice thing about it was there and not the other ship, we would step into the shower and soap down and step out of the shower then. And
you took a very quick shower, I take
no,
it?
No, they turned, they go, you took your turn out, the other crews would be going through, other service men were going through, doing the same thing, kind of rotate back.
Oh my goodness, like an assembly line
then
shower.
Then you go back and get
rinse?
Showered off then.
Oh, that's so funny.
Dried off.
Was the water warm?
Yes, it was good. It was nice.
That's
it was
good.
Fast.
Uh-huh.
Wow. I went across, Iwo Jima.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was sitting on the flight deck. I didn't have any general quarters or anything, and every time we were in a close operating zone, we'd have general quarters in the morning with the wake-up call, general quarters. We'd latch everything down. I was sitting on the outside by the gun mounts, and I saw a lot of smoke over the distance. And here that was another air group. The Franklin had been bombed, and they weren't in general quarters. The bomb went down about 3 decks and just ruined the inside of it.
Hmm.
But, then later on, I think a couple of days later, I got an officer came in. We're going to send you over to the Bon Homme Richard, a new ship there. The reason I bring this up, the shower's going to come into it. I come in. The Bon Homme Richard was a new ship just out there, and the admiral in that division was moving to that. The officer says, we want you and go over there and set up their new office. So here's the destroyer comes alongside. String up the lines and put me on a pantyhose, you might say. Legs went into it. So.
Like a saddle.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I wasn't saddling. I just, it was on you.
Oh, like pants. Okay.
Yeah, and they swung you over to the other destroyer and took it over there. Anyway, the story got over there, and I hated it. We were setting up a new office, and I'd take them on to take a shower. Some of the guy was sitting in that shower just enjoying it. You know, you're outside there naked. And when is going to get done? When is it going to... I said, hell is it. I won't even shower. It's just one of the things that I bet 99% of people won't remember
never,
anything like this.
Or never heard of before.
Never heard of it.
After you shower, do you eat breakfast and you go right to work in the office, right?
Well, that's right with that day at the office. One occasion before Iwo Jima, you asked what we did. One occasion, as we're off time, we'd study shorthand.
Oh, okay.
The 3 of us would study there, and we had a chief yeoman who was in charge of our office. Nice young man, a nice older man. But then we'd study that, and one day I got an assignment to go up to. Oh, it says the admiral's calling. Wants to write a letter, so I had to go up there. And I was pretty new at that. I had to go to the admiral's quarters to take a lesson from him. And I was awed at, here's a Marine outside the door, letting me in. And I was excited about being in the admiral's quarters, and he lived like a king up there.
What was the admiral you mentioned that you worked for at this time? What was his name?
Gardner.
Admiral Gardner.
Admiral Gardner. He was a thin fellow, very quiet.
And he oversaw...
The whole division.
The whole division.
Not the ship.
Right. And Captain Glover was your captain on the Enterprise, right?
I don't know him. I never saw, heard
oh,
him.
Oh, you never met him?
No.
Okay.
We were always in a separate. We were really not part of the ship.
Did you, like, so when you would go to, like, the Admiral's office, you'd take dictation, and then you were processing other, like, classified orders and things like that in the office, the secretarial pool area, is that what it was, or?
Well, it was three of us there who did
three
all
of you.
Of
okay.
They had about, in fact, I have a picture someplace of them. They had about 20 officers involved in it, a lot more than the regular sailors.
Hmm.
You see, they were in charge of recovery, and they were in charge of, just a little bit of everything. And each one of them would have been assigned an order. So we would be writing up their orders.
Now, was this something that, like, you would find out information and tell other people about? Like, you couldn't do that, right? Find out. Were you more well-informed than the average?
Well, yeah, I wrote everything.
Yeah, so did people, like, ask you questions about,
no.
Hey, what's going on? Were
no.
You, and you probably weren't allowed to talk about it, right?
No, but I don't think anybody even knew, even cared.
Oh.
I don't think of my class, of
okay.
Sailors. I don't think they did.
Okay.
One morning I remember I got some papers to write up, type up, and I was a good typer. I'd typed a long time. And it's funny because we didn't have any duplicating machines or anything, so you put your papers in this and it would go up a line.
Mm-hmm.
Just punch a button, go a line, you just keep on button, go like that, you know.
Hmm.
As long as the waves too big, once while you're...
Oh, you know, the waves of the ship?
Yeah, because your carriage...
just falls
be
off.
Gone, yeah.
Stick it back in shape again.
Mm. Right.
So anyway, one day I had to write up stuff for Iwo Jima, and the chief came over and gave me a stamp. It was about this big. On the top it says, Top Secret. I was stamping every paper that I typed.
Mm.
So I felt good over that. I felt...
Were you ever tempted to take a peek?
Oh, I knew everything I did.
Yeah, he was right. He was...
The top secret. Oh, you were right.
Yeah, he was recording
writing.
It.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I was putting on
that's
paper.
The part we cut out where I talk about when I say something stupid, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I first... I asked him if he like, stole that stamp as a souvenir.
Oh,
I would have, yeah. I would have stamped everything top secret.
I had a little something, if I may add, a little... wasn't funny at the time, but later on it's funny. I had a lot of permission... in my own mind, anything you wrote to girlfriends or anything at all was, you left it open. They read it and then they stamped it.
Mm.
They would stamp it, then it'd be all right to be sent. And I got a letter one time from a girlfriend that says, I think something happened. I think you didn't mean to send me this letter.
And boy. And your mouth got dry.
Two girls.
Bob.
Yeah.
You sent the same letter to two girls?
No.
Oh.
They switched them around.
Oh, Bob.
It's not false.
I didn't.
But close.
Yeah. Oh, the
guy,
Navy did.
From now on, I did my own.
Yeah.
I had a stamp. I stamped it and put some kind of initial on it.
Should we assume this was not your future wife?
One of them, yes.
Does she know the story? That's the question.
One of them, I didn't date her a couple of times in my grade in high school, and dated her a couple of times once is all. And she, I got the first letter back, knowing anything back from her. I said, appreciate your letter, but we can go on being friends, but let's leave it at that.
Yeah. At least you tried.
I tried.
You did try.
I tried.
Got no credit.
And I didn't change. And I think the guy was reading the letters. I would like to know who did that. I wonder if he was just laughing and doing it on purpose.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe.
Goodness.
See,
that's
I didn't
pretty
know.
Maniacal.
I had to write it not even the same day, see, that
yeah.
wrote it, so I didn't
no.
get it mixed up.
It
so you happens. Had you kept a pretty active social life, is what you're saying, Bob. You had two girlfriends.
Yes.
Definitely you get this for that.
Oh, good.
And, of course, for some of the stories you told us today and your status as a veteran of the Second World War. I think a lot of people grew up not even thinking about, you know, 9/11, let alone the Second World War. So this is really special for us that you've come here.
He's got a whopper of a story that I would love for share about.
Let's hear it.
About that plane and then reading the book later.
Oh, yeah. My eyesight is failing quite a bit. And the Sight Center, right down the street here.
Mm-hmm.
Sight Center has audio player and so forth.
Yeah.
And it's so nice. And it's one I loved. I signed up with history. I got a lot on the World War. And this was... history was, there was all kinds of stuff, and one was the admiral of, Japanese admiral, a big four-star like Limitz was. It was his memoirs that his wife or family had turned over to for a book. And it was quite interesting, because a lot of things sang, but the one man I'd told her before, as one of those areas out of Okinawa, off Okinawa, I'm not sure where it was. But I went up on, I was going up to the Admiral's quarters or wherever we're going. It's for flag office where they, he directed the whole division from there, going up there on the catwalk. And I looked up and here's an airplane about 100 yards from me, tipped on the side and dropped a bomb. I just saw it bounce along and hit underneath me, about 10 feet under me, and broke in half.
Wow.
Well, not in half, the fuse broke off of it. And that's where they got the Purple Heart from, because it was smoked up bad and my lungs were filled with the smoke from it.
Wow.
Anyway, I'd mentioned to her when she first interviewed that I was reading this book. And this admiral was near the end of the war. He was telling about the suiciders and all that kind of stuff. And he said he had one of his top pilots was not a suicider. And he dropped a bomb on the Enterprise and it didn't go off.
Oh, wow.
I read that like 70 or 80 years later.
Yeah.
Not talking about his bomb.
My bomb. I think they announced I had to give a little information on what it was to the for the ship or to write it up.
Yeah,
and it landed on it skidded on an elevator, and the elevator wasn't flat with the flight deck where they brought the planes up and down.
Right,
and it caught on that. And didn't penetrate then because it had tipped or something, didn't penetrate.
Wow.
That's how it ended up bouncing around.
And it just kicked the fuse off so it didn't detonate.
Yeah, because it was bouncing, it knocked the fuse off.
Mm. What an amazing story, yeah. Mm-hmm. You were meant to be here.
Mm-hmm. And you just read that book just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, a few weeks ago I read the book.
Yeah, and when I say you were meant to be here, I mean in this very studio.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I'll want to think about that. I do.
Yeah,
I've thought about my life. I'm not religious, but my wife made me go to church. But I quite often I say, why?
Mm. You know. Yeah.
What would you give, so if somebody else younger than you was asking themselves that same sort of question, you know, having had an experience like that and living to 99, you know, do you have any insight? You know, just...
No, I really don't. But let me go back to that San Diego time. I don't think now people can realize what this country was and what we have through the years' time. What we have the responsibility we have for the young people. I was. Thought of this because of the, like you say, I had a granddaughter with three boys in Perrysburg. You have three different schools.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the middle school, they call it, gorgeous kids. Their mothers are, this is the time I was in the grade school. Those first graders come in and they're so cute. and your mother know there's going to be have a program that day, and they're on their little dresses and their hairs, and they're so cute. And then I went into the middle school too with hundreds and hundreds. One grade filled the whole side of a wall of the gymnasium wall, and I thought the responsibility we've had is not political. It has something to do with putting this thought in the wonderful country we're living in to those young kids.
Yeah.
Because they know they're going to be that, and we had, I do have a feeling there that that they're going to be much more advantageous with the technologies and so forth, but they're going to have to live with that differently than we had to live with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be very different. It's already very different from the greatest generation, you know, to whatever is there now. I'm a boomer, so anything past boomers, you know.
I know.
I don't think of them.
I'm a millennial. We're not any better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Throw the phones away. That's what Pop says.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Bob. It's been a real pleasure just to hear a little bit of your life and your stories from that time. It's really a privilege for us to spend time with you. So thank you for coming
on
today.
Thank you for your service, Bob.
Sure, yes. Thank you. It's been so fast, you might say, of reaching this age with very few World War II anymore. You don't think about pretty soon. You think, you know, quite an exception of being a World War II anymore, because you have to be 97, see, to be in the war. So I know time flies so fast, and I hope that the other people like you that can realize what you have to be good Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob Masters has been our guest today. Bob is a veteran of the Second World War, served on many ships and many different missions, and we talked a little bit about that today. You've been listening to Opera Out of the Box, which is a co-production of WGTE Public Media and Toledo Opera, with additional support from Ohio Humanities. You can find previous episodes online at our website, WGTE.org. And of course, you can dive into all things Toledo Opera at their website, ToledoOpera.org. Again, I want to thank my guests, Leah Whitaker and Bob Masters. I'm your host, Brad Cresswell, and this has been Opera Out of the Box.